And I wouldn't be in commercial real estate if it wasn't for you.
The smallest is 3.5 million, and the largest is about 15 million right now.
Wow.
I wanted to be a hotel manager. And my heart is beating so fast. Sharif, you're at the right place at the right time. Just say yes.
It took me 5 years to do my first deal.
Oh my God. Yeah. Killers need to eat too. You're constantly up against the physical universe.
I never in my life thought I would be here.
Exchange of value is the key thing in life. Largest amount of money I made on one deal.
Hey guys, welcome to the Shane So Podcast. We're kicking it back with Sharif Medawar, my good friend, real estate investor. He also owns two real estate funds, and he's an educator. Sharif, thank you for being out here with me.
Thank you so much.
Man, it's so great. Nice to always come visit you here.
Thank you, anytime.
So I was figuring, do you mind to tell everyone about yourself a little bit?
So I've been in the real estate business for over 40 years now, and started barely, I was 20 years old. I wanted to be a hotel manager. So what happened is I met a billionaire at the Century Plaza Hotel, which is in Los Angeles. And he noticed how many hours I was working, and he stopped me in the lobby and he said, listen, what are you doing? I see you coming from 6 a.m. and you stay till like midnight learning all over the place. What are you doing? I said, I don't know if you noticed, I have a golden name tag. They told me if I do a good job for 10 years, I could move up to general manager. And he said, you know what? I've been looking at you. I've been observing you. You're so full of enthusiasm. Why don't you come and work for me? Now, I was so surprised. I asked him, what do you want me to do? And he said, look, I have properties around the world. I want somebody to fly to different places, speak on my behalf. I'll tell you what to say. I'll tell you what to do. I got scared. I said, sir, thanks for your confidence in me, but I don't know anything about real estate. And he grabbed me by the shoulder and he just like said, Sharif, you're at the right place at the right time. Just say yes. I said, okay, let's do it. Took my name, went, got the flight tickets from the lobby. We had travel agencies in the lobby, and I flew into New York and I met with him. And we talked about all what he wanted to throw at me. And it was very exciting. It was a big learning experience, but I know how to learn things quick, and I know how to apply. And just the rest is history, really. I worked for him 8 years.
8 years, wow.
And I was doing deals on his behalf. He would tell me what to do. He would be in France, usually, or traveling around the world. He owned castles in France, actually. Chateau de Madame de Pompadour. That's one of the things he owned. I was his right-hand man and kind of grew into that position and started suggesting deals. And that's when I knew maybe it's time for me to do it. It does not require a lot of money. It requires strategies and structures. Mm-hmm. So I told him 8 years later, I'm ready to leave. Is it okay if I leave? And he said, you know what, Sharif? You labeled yourself as working for Edmond Bessari, and you are going to stay there forever. Before that, you labeled yourself as a hotel manager. You were going to be stuck there forever. Don't label yourself. Be free and go help some other people like I helped you. So I left him, started my own education company, investments and stuff, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's amazing. So how was it transitioning from doing deals with him and doing your, like, what was your first deal like? What was your
That's a great
deal?
Question, because when I was doing deals for him, millions of dollars were kind of a concept, mm-hmm. like a casino, you know? It's like, okay, we're going to pay you $7 million, okay, $8 million, whatever. Mm-hmm. When it came to my first deal, it was a $300,000 deal in Solana Beach, California. And it was a duplex. I saw it in Penny Saver, which was a magazine. There was no internet at the time. This was 1989. And I remember I called this lady and I said, well, you say that you want to sell. You are in a hurry. Would you meet me so I can see that duplex? Duplex is 2 units. And I had actually, when I left him, went to work for the Del Mar Hilton in North County, San Diego. So I was looking to make deals close by. It was Solana Beach, the next city close. And the lady said, okay, come over at 7 o'clock and I can show you the unit. And then the next door is rented, we'll show you. So I remember going there and the deal, she told me, I'll tell you when you arrive. I had done my research and I thought it was gonna be 360,000, 380,000. But when I arrived, she toured me and I found my heart beating so hard because it was my first deal. Now this is real money now, 300,000, that's just a lot of money. And when I asked her, how much do you want? I thought 360 or something. And she said 315. And I said 350? Like I wasn't sure because 15 and 50. She goes 315. I said, wow, like, I couldn't believe how good a deal it was. And she said, okay, if you're serious and you can close quickly, I'll do it for 300,000. So that flinch, what I call it, a flinch, my reaction, she dropped $15,000.
Wow.
So I've been flinching since. But the key thing is, I said to her, is there something wrong with the duplex? She said, no, this is a good deal for you, but I'm going to Europe. I have a great opportunity. I don't have to pay taxes on the first 70,000 in income, whatever. And she was all excited about leaving. Mm-hmm. So that was my first deal. I put it under contract. I went to the city and I asked if I could separate the duplex into two condos or two townhouses.
Segregate them.
And they told me it was going to cost me about $8,000, separate the water meter, gas meter, electric meter. But I calculated per square foot, I could sell each side at like $250,000.
Wow.
So it was a no-brainer. It took just like less than 90 days, got everything taken care of, put it for sale as individual townhouses, and sold them, cashed out $156,000. That was the net that I did. I remember putting that money in the bank, and I was walking the streets like skipping, like, you know who I am? I have $150,000. You know, I was a very important guy. But the key thing is, the way I did the deal, I didn't have cash. I had $1,500 in the bank. Mm-hmm. I actually, at the time, there was something called NINA loan. No income, no asset verification loan. So I went and got cash advance from my credit cards. There was a special program. If you work or buy in this zip code, two zip codes, you can put a 5% down. Mm. So I put a 5% down. The income from next door helped me qualify. I remember when the lady said, well, the income of the property will help you qualify. I said, come again? The income of the property, not my income from working or anything. Yeah, she said, yeah, because you're making so much. I was a manager at the Delmar Hilton. You're making so much with this income, you can qualify for the loan with 5% down. Mm. And we don't need to know, it's no income verification. So I took the 5% cash advance, got the loan, approved the property, split it into the two units, boom. Sold them, made the money, and I realized I got something that I can repeat and just expand.
Wow.
And then the next deal, I did the 172-unit apartment building. Just got the approval only to split it because it was still under contract, didn't have the money to put the down payment. Mm. And then put it in the Penny Saver, ended up selling it to another gentleman. And then from there, it started growing. I realized that it's better to do commercial because the multiplier is huge. And I like the triple net, you know, the single tenant buildings where I can put one tenant for 10, 15 years. And they pay me the rent plus tax, insurance, maintenance. So it was just a compounding effect. If you think of, I want to work on something that will have residual returns with a compounding returns as well.
Yes.
So you have that double power. Plus, when you get a loan, over time, the loan gets paid down. There is inflation, so you borrow a dollar, you're paying it back 50 cents. So all this is the perfect trifecta. Mm-hmm. You buy a building, you put a tenant, you refinance, you cash out, and you keep the building. The tenant keeps paying the debt down, the building keeps increasing in value, mm-hmm. and you're just there sitting in the middle making money.
Absolutely.
So that, I kind of give you my whole story of how I...
No, I think that's amazing. But starting doing, it's crazy because with him, you was doing $1 million deals, but you're more afraid with your own money.
Exactly. Putting in like, you know, 15,000, 20,000 was like, oh my God, my heart is beating so fast. What if I lose it? So you almost have to conquer yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Mindset.
Exactly. Before you conquer anything else out there. But without knowledge, you can take action. You can all day long say, I'm going to just make this happen. I'm gonna be good for it. Oh my God, I got to tell myself. I don't believe in all this. I just believe in gaining the knowledge to have better judgment, mm-hmm. taking action to gain the skills. But the third most important thing an individual has to do is to build a network. Because to have the right network of people, you first have to build yourself so you have something to exchange with the people that you meet. You want to attract them, you say, listen, what if I bring you a deal like this? Would you be able to partner with me on it? Or how would you like to structure? Mm-hmm. So that networking is the shortcut. That's why some person can achieve so much in 3-4 years. I mean, look at how much you've achieved. You are a networker by very nature. You're very kind. You're a great listener. And I've noticed that about you. And right away, you build rapport with people and they're interested. And it's like, well, so what are you doing? And then the conversation becomes more business-like.
Absolutely.
I don't want to talk about the weather, the sports, or politics. I just want to talk about business.
It's what more deals fun. Are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What deals are you doing? Yeah, what mistakes have you done? I help you with, you know, stuff like that.
So I guess you see how important it was. If it wasn't for him coming, that billionaire.
Exactly.
He was really a mentor, and he gave you experience.
Exactly.
And most people don't have access to that type of mentor. Is that why you started the education business and everything?
Very true. Really, when he told me, when I was leaving him, he said, look, Sharif, what I've done for you, you helped me back. There was an exchange of value. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go out there and do that with 10 other people? Your business will grow, you'll help others, and in life you can't help unless you get help. It's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. But don't help them to get, help them out of faith. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened is I went out there and said, well, how can I help some people? So I put free events for my hotel colleagues, and it started growing like crazy. And then because I was in the hotel business, started meeting people doing events and stuff. And then I met a very good company that said, listen, we like what you're doing, the way you talk, the way you present yourself. Why don't we promote you? And they got me into the education business from the seminar angle. And then after that, they went out of business because 2008, 2009, unfortunately for them, the market worked against them. So I branched out my own. And then I started educating people on how to do creative financing, how to do residential, how to do commercial. And then I got so much better because when you teach, you have to know, like it's called teaching is knowing twice. Mm-hmm. You really have to have the answers. And I never BS anybody. If they ask me a question and I don't know it, I say, look guys, we're gonna take a lunch break. I'm gonna call the attorneys, get you the exact answer with the tax code or with this depreciation schedule. And I'll get back to you. So I got very good very quickly. And then I knew how good I am when I started doing the transactions that are bigger with ease.
Yes, yeah. So I don't know if you know this. It took me 5 years to do my first deal because I didn't have a mentor. I was terrified. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to do it. It took me 5 years. I got 30 or 40 properties under contract during that time and canceled them all.
Got
it. You know, so if I would have had a mentor and good knowledge,
yes,
I would have started a lot sooner. In fact, seeing your stuff, you know, and when I did do my first deals, I was doing more creative finance, just owner finance. But honestly, watching your videos on YouTube helped me see that you can mix between creative and traditional. In fact, your first deal, you was kind of creative. You got your credit cards out and then did something traditional.
Exactly.
So I think that's amazing.
Very good point. And it's okay to be scared. You know, you don't want somebody who just want to jump in with both feet to test the depth of water, you know, like they say. So don't regret that you're hesitant because now you can appreciate the knowledge you have and the guts that comes with it. Because what connects knowledge to action is courage. But you can't have courage unless you take action. So when you take action, you gain more knowledge and you can take more action. It's like then you become so confident that your ability to grow becomes almost exponential as well. But then you still have to be careful because the minute you think I'm too smart is the minute you're gonna fall. Mm-hmm. And if I can mention something, like you're constantly up against the physical universe, which is time, distance, matter, which is money, and energy. This is the physical universe, is these four elements. And so if in the physical universe, if I say I'm going to go from this chair right here to a swimming pool over there, let's say, mm-hmm. if I'm going to walk there, already there is like, okay, the weather, maybe there's an obstacle, maybe I'm going to trip, maybe, you see, there is always a counter intention, maybe I shouldn't do it, and whatever. So you almost have to take it as a spiritual experience. And in the world of spiritual universe, you have to be creative, you have to be playful. Because when problems happen, you can't go inside the problems. You have to constantly come outside and look at them to be able to look at the problem and come up with creative solutions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just very hard because there's constant challenges and problems that will come against you in everything you do. And only a fool wants to just advance and figure it out later. You just have to have a plan and execute the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find very challenging. So when I confront a problem now, I say, okay, first I look at me. Have I done everything right regarding this situation? Number two, the team that I have handling this, are they the qualified right team? Do they know what they're doing? Are they working well together? So if it's me doing everything right and the team is doing everything right, then the third element is it the market? Is it the city? Is it the politics of the country that's happening right now? There's war or whatever, is global pandemic. I had a great team. I was doing everything the right way, but then there was a global pandemic. They slowed me down on some of the projects. They said, you can't go in. We don't want anybody. The country shut down for a good 3-4 weeks. So those are the three areas you look at. So many people don't want to look at themselves first. They don't want to take responsibility. And you can only take responsibility so much and blame the team so much if the third party, which is like in 2022 when they increased the interest rate, the highest, the fastest way in the history of the country.
Crazy.
So many people got killed right after COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you didn't die of COVID, you're dying the financial death from the interest rate increasing like crazy. So those are the challenges that you have to be very creative about.
Yeah, so you got to know, you have to have a good knowledge, and number two, be able to pivot by having a good tool belt.
So that's the action you're taking. It's like, should I do it this way? Okay, that was the plan. Wait a minute, it's not going to happen. Interest has gone up so much. Like these people I have talked to that set up real estate funds, bought apartment buildings in 2020, 2021, and they said, oh, we're taking advantage of COVID. We're making good offers now. We're raising money. And their plan was, oh, we're going to kick some people out, raise the rent, and then refinance, cash out money. Wait a minute. 2022, they're trying to execute the plan. And guess what? Interest rate is way higher. If they refinance, they're upside down.
That's right.
Exactly. So now what do you do? Well, if you're creative, maybe split the apartment building into condos and sell them as condos.
That's right. That's right.
You see my point? That make a lot more money. Maybe sell all the upstairs, pay off the downstairs, get a credit line and keep that and then do other deals. Mm-hmm. So, but when you're under pressure, if you can't take yourself outside and be playful about it, you can't think.
Yeah.
You can't. You give somebody a bunch of problems, that's it. They emotionally, they drop. So their emotion affects their motion. So their knowledge gets shut down because they only have a tunnel vision of, oh my God, I got a problem, got a problem. So that knowledge gets so constricted and the action, there is no more energy. They can do it. And what network? How are they going to network? They're a mess. You go talk to them, they're depressed.
Yeah.
And those are the challenges that the person has to have an unbelievable amount of energy to keep conquering themselves and inspiring others and working against the current of problems like the banks want to change, the banks don't want to extend the loans, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I always say a good real estate investor, a good investor is always learning. And it seems like some people stop the learning curve and then they run out of options, specifically when something changes.
Yes, very true, very true. And you mentioned mentorships many times. So I was lucky to have the mentor only on. And because the guy was a billionaire, it was very hard for me to go get somebody else to mentor me because then I started with the top echelon of investors in the world. I mean, Edmond Bessari, they wrote books about him in Europe. But the idea is, look at a basketball player, look at a boxer. Well, they always need a coach. I mean, I was just reading yesterday about Usain Bolt. You know how Usain Bolt, this guy won, being the fastest man in the world? He had the physical presence and size and muscles, and he was so committed to doing it, but he could not win. Until a coach came in and told him, your problem is you're getting too uptight when you start running. Mm-hmm. You need to relax. Relax and win. It's amazing. You should Google it and see. So Usain Bolt, all he did was he just relaxed his motion. And it increased his speed by 20%. Just imagine, the guy was winning, not split seconds. He's winning like several feet difference.
Wow.
And the whole thing was the coach looking at him and saying, you're too tense. Your muscles tense up. Just relax. Just relax yourself. So easier said than done, of course. Mm-hmm. But that's what a coach can do. So I always think to myself, can I become my own best advisor? Can I become my own best mentor? Mm-hmm. And yes, you can. If you think of your problem as if it was your best friend's problem, mm-hmm. and you say, what would I tell my best friend? What would I tell my cousin, my brother, my spouse, or something like this? You, all of a sudden, you're outside the problem, and you can write down so many solutions. That's one way to become your own best advisor. Another way is I ask others, and they don't have to necessarily be in real estate. It could be a priest. It could be an accountant. It could be an attorney. And everybody will give me different feedback and say, what would you do if you were me? Have you ever encountered this problem? Do you know somebody who had that problem and solved it? Because the problem is not the same. I can give you the same problem, but it's a year later. The market is different a year later. Same problem. oh, I can't sell. But you can sell here and you can sell here, different market, different time, whatever. But wait a minute, we can sell and carry the financing, it will be easier. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can get a partner if I can sell and I can buy time. So you, all of a sudden you start writing these ideas as if you're advising somebody else. You start asking others, get different feedback at different spaces. Next thing you know, you have a bunch of solutions. And you can actually not implement one, you can implement four or five solutions at once. I'm gonna look for a partner, mm-hmm. I'm gonna discount the price, I'm gonna do a seller carry back, I'm gonna do a wraparound mortgage. And all of a sudden, your knowledge gives you all these options and you're no longer under the pressure of the problem, you're outside looking and trying to come up with the best solutions. And if the best solution is you gotta throw the towel, you gotta sell it at a loss, then hey, maybe that's the best solution so you can live to fight another day.
Absolutely. And so when did you, okay, how many years ago was it that you started, did that first deal, I guess, that 300?
Oh, that was, the first deal for myself was 1989.
1989.
So 89, 99, 2009, 2019. So that was 35 years ago.
Okay, so that started with a little duplex. So now what kind of deals are you working on now, like development or?
Okay, so, flips or? So now I work on, I have these luxury homes that we do in San Francisco. That's a whole challenge by itself. I can talk about it later. We do developments from the ground up, cookie cutter homes in Florida. Those are nice and steady. Mm-hmm. Of course, we got hit a little bit with the interest rate increase. It's been a challenge the last, from COVID time to now, but we're diversified. Also, I have in my personal portfolio, I have in Puerto Rico, mixed-use commercial properties in Old San Juan. Puerto Rico is part of the U.S. I love these type of properties. They're between $2 to $10 million homes. Mm. And I shouldn't say homes, they are really, upstairs is residential, downstairs is commercial. Mm-hmm. So we bring in these long-term tenants, and upstairs we do Airbnb or long-term residential. But we're right in Old San Juan where the cruise ships business arrive.
Right, located.
So it's US, it's the oldest historic zone under US flag. So the older the buildings get, the more valuable they become. I've been in that market for over 20 years, and it's got a lot of tax benefits. And I own so many of these buildings that I control the market, if you will, in terms of price per square foot, etc. Even my real estate fund got in there for a while, and then we refinanced some of the building, paid back the fund, and gave the fund even more money to work on the challenges we have in San Francisco.
So what got you into Puerto Rico?
Originally, believe it or not, I was with Hilton Hotels. I had continued with Hilton doing real estate on the side. And Hilton Hotel asked me to help them. They had a problem with the hotel and casino in Isla Verde, which is right next to the airport. It was, Hilton had bought Embassy Suites division. And it was an Embassy Suites hotel and casino. And I knew hotels, I knew resorts, I knew casinos. Mm-hmm. So I went there to turn the hotel around. And in one of the trips I took to kind of know the San Juan area, I went into Old San Juan where the cruise ships arrive, and I looked at these buildings, beautiful, one next to the other, historic buildings with commercial downstairs, people coming in, walking the streets, thousands of people. I said, what's going on here? He said, well, this is cruise ship traffic. And then the guy that was driving the car, he said to me, yeah, there's a lot of tax benefits here. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're always alert and aware, you see, like my mission in life, I don't like to drink, I don't like to be unaware, I like to be completely alert. And I said, tell me again, what do you mean tax benefits? Oh, these buildings are historic buildings. You have to do something, they give you tax benefits, but I don't know what it is. He had no interest. Why? Mm-hmm. Because he had a job with the benefits of Hilton. But me, I have the job with a salary and bonus, but I also do real estate where the big money is, and I'm compounding it. Mm-hmm. And one day I said, I'm gonna buy a hotel. So that was my goal. So I said, tax benefits? I can actually cut my career because I'm paying 40% taxes in California, buying, selling, I'm paying a lot of taxes. Mm-hmm. So the rest is history. I started looking into the tax savings. That's how I discovered that Puerto Rico is a good place to invest in, and Old San Juan is the place to actually focus on. And I started with the first building, bought it, rehabbed it, put a big tenant in. Single tenant buildings also, I got it single tenant, so it's a one tenant building. Put it under contract, started calling all the national tenants, got them in. They pay a lot of money, 10-year leases. Mm-hmm. They pay it with tax, insurance, maintenance. Buy the building, $1.5 million, put the big tenants worth $2.5 million. We're talking millions and millions and millions done in the 90s doing this. and it just really transformed my life.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but the first time that I saw you actually on YouTube was you was talking about triple net leases. And then we actually flew out to Puerto Rico, and that's when me and my brother met you.
I remember,
of course. So can you explain for those at home that don't know what it is, what is a triple net lease?
Okay, so a triple net lease is when you lease a commercial space you have to a big tenant. Usually it's a national tenant like Jack in the Box, Starbucks, Ben and Jerry's, Subway. I mean, you name it. There's about 5,000 national tenants in the United States. So they take the space and they want to lease it for 10 to 15 years. So they write a lease for 10 to 15 years. And the beauty is they take it. They may ask you to do some work inside for them or to kick in some money, but they will commit to the lease triple net, meaning they will pay the lease plus net of taxes, net of insurance, and net of maintenance. They handle the maintenance, they pay the property tax, they pay the property insurance. Moreover, they give a corporate guarantee. These are publicly traded companies, so their corporate guarantee means a lot. If they cancel the lease, they have to pay you the rest of the term. If they don't want to pay the rest of the term, they have to pay you a discount cash right then and then. They can even sublease to another big tenant to replace them. Now you have two corporate guarantees. Mm-hmm. So to specialize in this is a very unique niche. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique area, and not many people know it or know how to deal with it or know how to deal with contracts or know how to select the properties. And as you know, what ended up happening is I made so much money with this that I created a program. I called it the Joint Venture Program. I said, if you want to learn commercial real estate, if you want to start, I will train you for like $10,000 and you will know what nobody else knows. I've had brokers come to me. I've had attorneys come to us for the training. And I do the training myself. I group in like 4 or 5 people. They usually fly into Puerto Rico so I can show them my inventory. I got like a lot of properties there. I got 30 buildings there, mixed use by the port. And I train them how to find the right property, how to line up the right tenant, how to use my proof of fund. I have cash that I have sitting. They can use the proof of fund. They can put the deal under contract. I give them a list of tenants. Mm-hmm. Say, start smiling and dialing. When one tenant answers, all you need is one tenant. You email me and we get on a conference call. I will close them. Mm-hmm. We got the property at $800,000 under contract. We got that national tenant to sign up. I'm negotiating with them. I'm kicking in any money needed. Guess what? The property value goes to $1.5 million, $1.6 million. Mm-hmm. On that increase, I'll give you 10 to 25%. So you can walk away with $50,000 to $150,000, depends how many years they're gonna sign. And that's an assignment fee. You don't need to be licensed. You don't need to be an expert. I do the whole training. And that's how we met.
That is.
You saw that, and then you came in. But you're a different level. I mean, you took that stuff, boom, 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 to another. I think, didn't you, like, the first deal you did, like, $900,000? I remember you had
a success. Yeah, we did, well, we got it for $400,000. We did it for $1.3 million or so.
Yeah.
That was the first deal.
So, mm-hmm. So people come out, and a lot of people come, they say, look, Sharif, I'm not going to assign the deal to you. I'm just going to learn from you. I'm going to go do it by myself, but help me negotiate it. And once they become part of the program, we do it, work very closely with them for a full year. We've had 1,000 video success stories on YouTube.
That's amazing.
It made them, it made me a lot of money. I think that's the best thing I've done in my life, creating an education company, trying to give back what the billionaire had showed me. I tried to show people through a symbiotic relationship. I'll help you. You can assign the deal to me. I'll help you. You don't want to assign it? No problem. Go do your deal. We even help people now set up their own real estate funds.
Yes, yeah.
You know, like,
and I did that too.
Yeah, you did it. You did two. You did two funds. One which is the public solicitation, Reg D506C, mm-hmm. and the other one which is private friends and family, Reg D506B. And you've also taken that to a great level. You just killed it, man. You're just
I tell everyone, I wouldn't be in commercial real estate if it wasn't for you.
You're a good
really.
Man. Thank you. Thank
but it's helped me so much. I was going to ask you actually, what was the best thing you've ever done? So is that the education? Do you believe that was it?
Yes.
And the most fulfilling?
The reason I think is the best thing I've ever done is it made me realize who I am, what I want to present to the world. Mm-hmm. And it made me so good at it that I can answer any question. I can help people set up a real estate fund. Like literally work with them on the business plan, the paperwork that needs to be given to the attorney. We have in-house attorneys now.
That's right.
And give a turnkey to people, like $25,000, $35,000, and set them up. And they're up and running with their own fund within 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's better than, like, any attorney will set them up, there is no doubt. But they're not going to coach them how to raise capital. They're not going to tell them this is the structure that will be best. And this is how you do this payout. This is how you work as partnerships with your fund, with another fund, etc. These are nuances I learned in the last 17 years that I've been dealing with SEC and real estate funds and all this. And it's not for everybody. Somebody has to be doing the work and want to expand and all this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so doing the training has been good for me, good for others, and good for actually many communities where we grew in. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your funds. You're still actively has your two funds too, right?
What are the names of those? So MixIF LLC and SFI Fund. MixIF is Metawar International Group Secured Income Fund. The other one is SFI Fund, Secured Income Fund. Mm-hmm. Both funds partner up on deals, and we do deals in San Francisco. That's basically the main focus right now because that's the biggest challenge we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been very challenging because the city of San Francisco went from the best city to the worst city. But we're trying to finish these projects, and hopefully the city turns around when we're ready to sell.
Yeah, I hope so, because those aren't small deals. They're like $4 million selling at, what, 12?
The smallest is $3.5 million, and the largest is about $15 million right now.
That's amazing.
Once we finish, it could be even more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So what got you into San Francisco then, whenever you started then many years ago?
So I had a home in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. in Santa Clara, and I had done many, many deals very successfully in the Bay Area, and I had a team there, and I still have a team there. So that was the easy part is... It's been always a pleasant surprise. Like in 2008, 2009, I started the first fund in 2009. Mm-hmm. Actually, funds in the United States, private funds, didn't even take off till 2015 or 16. And 2009, I was getting these properties at the auction. I had a team that would bid at the auction in San Mateo County. Mm-hmm. We got the properties, we fixed them and sell them. And every time we think we're gonna sell at a certain price, we'd sell a little bit more, multiple bids, et cetera, even though in a bad market. But, as we continued growing, we just got a momentum there like everything else and residual value with the relationships. And we continued and we reached the peak until the market now is very difficult because the city, the permits and all this is so delayed. It's just so, so slow.
Yeah. So real quick, I'm sure you get this question all the time, but I like to have it on camera, especially from you. Like I said, I always tell everyone you know how to take something very complicated and simplify it, okay?
Thank you.
If someone wanted to get started into real estate, what's mm-hmm. like four or five steps? Like, what's the first couple of steps that they need to do? Like education, mentor, something. What would be those steps?
Okay, so the best thing is to have the education, mm-hmm. but from somebody who's doing it. Not somebody who's trained to educate. It's not like you don't need a teacher. Mm-hmm. You need somebody doing it who wants to share what they're doing.
Yes.
And if it's residential, I suggest that they learn two things, how to do wholesale, because it involves the marketing to attract people, mm-hmm. and it involves some creative financing. So the second thing is creative financing. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, I get a property, I put a down payment, get a loan. Maybe I get a property and I sell it to somebody all cash for more. Maybe I get a property and I have the seller carry the financing. Maybe I get a property and there is existing financing, do a wraparound. Some people say, get it and do subject to. Subject two can get very complicated. There has been some issues with it. But anyway, mm-hmm. There are some big programs with subject two. I just prefer wraparound and seller carry back. They're a little bit more solid for how you structure the deal. And the bank cannot come back and create problems. I also mm-hmm. like options, option to buy it, etc. So that's residential. Mm-hmm. So understand that if you want to do residential. But there is no reason you just can do residential or start with residential. You can start with commercial. The best thing in commercial is to find somebody who can show you the way because they're going to benefit. That's the honest truth. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a two-way street.
You got to incentivize them a little bit.
You got to incentivize. So, for example, if people tell me, so why do you share the knowledge about how to find single-tenant buildings? And you, well, I'll tell you why I tell this to people. Because I tell them, I'm going to give you the proof of funds. So when you call on the property that's for sale, and you're talking to a commercial real estate broker, these guys are the elite in the country. Mm-hmm. So they're gonna tell you, do you have proof of funds? You can show them my proof of funds. I have a personal CD with money in it, millions. Mm-hmm. And we can show you that. So then you're talking on my behalf, so they'll take you seriously. You put it under contract, you have no obligation to buy. So I'm training the people, why? Because I'll give you the list of tenants. You call them, you tell them the script I'm giving you. All we need is one tenant to email you back, say we're ready to discuss this location. Mm-hmm. Starbucks would like to build in this location. Please, let's get on a call Monday or Wednesday. forward that to me. I tell the student, I will get in on the call. I will close them. You found the deal. You lined up the tenant. I'm going to pay you 10% of the upside. Upside is $600,000. You got $60,000. Oh, they signed for 15 years, which most people now want to sign 15 years because of the inflation. Mm-hmm. They signed 15 years. You get 25% of the upside. Mm-hmm. So the upside is $800,000. You got $200,000 check. It's an assignment fee. You don't have to be licensed. You don't have to do. So why am I doing that training in such depth with experience of 4 years? I bring it to you in one full day of training. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I'm going to make a lot of money. And you're going to make a lot of money. And the second deal, you don't even need me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I am trying to explain to people, you want to start with dedication, but find out who is training you. And why are they training you? Training you to sell you more coaching and more advanced coaching. And you never finish. Now you pay $25,000, you're going to pay another $40,000, $50,000. At the end, what are you going to do? You're going to be depressed.
Yeah.
But you're going to actually work with somebody you're going to assign the deal to, or you're going to do partnership with, or you're going to bring something to the... See how you can help somebody. And I'm not the only guy doing joint venture. I'm sure there are some other people doing it. Not at the level I have done it, and not for as many years as I've been doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very low-key, really. I don't grow with people like... I don't want masses of people. I just want less people and grow this way, more depth.
Very good quality and stable.
Exactly, I like exactly.
That. What do you think about, honestly, I'm sure since you're in the education field, I've noticed that there's some people teaching real estate and other things too, but specifically real estate. They've only done like one deal, five deals, and they're doing courses on how to teach.
Yes.
How often do you run into, do you think like 80% on the people online are doing that, or 50%, or what do you think?
I think the problem today is anybody with an iPhone or a Samsung phone, whatever, they can put it and they can talk and they're glib. Glib, as in like they can talk, but they really don't have any depth. As a matter of fact, if they do a presentation, they say, hold your questions. They don't want questions because they have something to vomit and something to sell and then leave.
That's right.
So although they're out there and some of them completely inexperienced, I would say, listen, because they may have one good idea. Mm-hmm. One time I attended a whole day event and I was just getting very frustrated because there was nothing new. There was nothing that made sense. A lot of things I could correct from the presenter. But then the guy said just one thing, and it was, I'll tell you what he said. This cost me a whole day of my life, okay? He said, when you buy a property that you're gonna sell it within 24 months, ask for a binder. Mm. So what's a binder? He didn't even define it. And I wrote binder. Later when he finished, I went to ask him, but he was so pleasant in front of the whole group, but when I came as an individual to ask him, he didn't have the time of day for me. He said, are you buying the program? I said, I'm sorry, I'm not, but I have a quick question. He said, no, let me talk to somebody else. Oh, so wow. I had to go research. The binder was, you tell the title company, mm-hmm. I'm going to get title insurance. So I'm going to sell the property, I'm going to flip the property within 2 years. I'm going to use the same office. So they tell you, instead of paying, let's say, title insurance $1,000, you pay us $1,100. But when you sell it, the other person paying title insurance, you get some money back. It ends up saving you on every deal couple $1,000. Now, maybe it's not that much, but I can't even tell you how many times I use this. I mean, I've used it like this was a long time ago when I attended the seminar because I was for a while trying to get as much knowledge out there as possible. Mm-hmm. So I went and attended, and I found out that, wow, these people are so just superficial and so much of what they say has no depth and no reality mm-hmm. that all they want is to sell. And if they're asked a question, they can answer. They ridicule the question, the person that asked the question. So it made me feel better about myself, and it made me get more serious about what I'm doing. And I wrote a book called The Blue Ocean Opportunities in Commercial Real Estate.
Oh, wow.
Why blue ocean? Meaning you have less competition. It's not a bloody ocean. Here, work in the areas where you have less competition. For example, if I'm going to go buy an apartment building, I got a lot of people competing. So apartment buildings were going up like crazy. The numbers don't even make any sense today. That never made any sense. So, but they're easier to get loans, et cetera. But in the single tenant buildings, the triple net arena, you have less competition. A lot of people don't understand them. Mm-hmm. And when you specialize, yet you understand everything else, you're able to compare. Mm-hmm. Because we're a creature of comparison. Even you buy a property, it's comparable sales, you see. So I wanted to see what assets will make me the most money in the shortest period of time possible. I wanted to work once and my work will give the residual income like in these single tenant buildings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I created the best two programs are the joint venture program. Let me show you how to get single tenant buildings work with me. The other one, hey, you've done it. Now you want to grow, go raise capital. I'm going to solve all your capital problems. We're going to train you exactly how to set up your own real estate fund. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're doing apartment buildings, doing well. Let me set you up better than any attorney. And I don't mean that with disrespect to attorneys. It's just I've been in it 17 years and I've seen a lot of people and I've trained a lot of people and I've seen what they have out there and I can tell you what works and what doesn't regarding a structure that will help you and help others grow with you.
Absolutely. Going back to creative and traditional makes, I thought it was real neat because there's more than just buying and selling or buying and renting. There's really a tax thing and a credit thing.
Yes.
You talked about one thing. And I remember you telling us the story. You bought, I think, a three-story building and had a triple net. Then there's, I think, an office space and then a penthouse on top. And there was a way you was able to structure the deal, get the financing, and not have to pay certain taxes or kick it down the road.
Yes. Yeah, so this deal was three levels. Upstairs was a penthouse. First and second floor were for retail, for Reebok. Okay. And Reebok had just left, so the building was empty. Mm-hmm. And it had the sign say available. Mm-hmm. But you could see the old Reebok sign. They had taken the letters, but you could see from the dust Reebok. So I called the seller. And I asked him, how much do you want? He said, 3.6 million. And I did the flinch on him, 3.6 million? And he said, are you calling me to buy or to cry? I said, no, it's just sitting vacant. He said, yeah, Reebok was there. They were paying $12,000 a month, first, second floor. I built a beautiful penthouse on top. I was going to move into it, but I got into a divorce case.
Okay.
I divorced. He was a very wealthy guy. I didn't need to sell it even. I said, listen, how about 3.4 million? He said, how about 3.5? And I said, well, can I just give you $5,000 to lock in the deal right now as I do due diligence? He said, yeah, but don't waste my time, okay? How long do you need? I said, how long can you give me? He said, 45 days the maximum. I don't want 90 days or 4 months, don't delay me. I said, okay. So I put the deal under contract for $5,000. And $5,000 is fine if they see proof of funds and all this. Mm-hmm. And I started smiling and dialing, and Puma Corporation called me back. And Puma said, we'll take the first and second floors. So in the meantime, I said to myself, what am I going to do with the third floor? It's residential. It's a beautiful penthouse. This is good. Once I can rent downstairs, I can figure out what I'm going to do upstairs. So when Puma called me and said, we're interested, I quoted them $20,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, because they liked the location. So $20,000 a month. And they said, we need to go in quickly before the busy season, which was Christmas. So I called the bank and I said, how quickly can we close? I got the deal under contract. They say, what escrow? Oh, geez, I haven't even sent the $5,000. This was all like 48 hours there. Yeah. So I called an escrow company. I send the money in, the $5,000. I send him all the papers he signed. And then I called him back. I said, I have good news and bad news. He said, oh, you're not going to buy. I said, no, I'm going to buy. That's the good news. I'm going to close very quickly. The bad news is you need to pay the closing cost. He said, well, you're going to save me a lot of money if you close like what we're talking. I said, like 9 days. He said, done. You're going to save me like a payment and a half or so. I said, beautiful. So we closed. Puma came in. And what I did was, that's $240,000 a year for 10 years with a corporate guarantee worth $800 million. Okay. I mean, like I'm going to get paid $20,000 a month for so many years, plus increase every year 3%. Mm. So what I did is I hired an attorney and I did a segregation. I segregated, not cost segregation, but segregated like condo conversion, mm-hmm. meaning one deed, one ownership for the whole triplex, if you will, into three separate deeded units.
Parcels, yeah.
Yes. So, and how to do this is you get an attorney mm-hmm. who knows real estate. They redraft the deed for each unit. They usually send an architect to measure to make sure, and then they write the deed. Unit one, floor level, unit two, second floor, unit three, this, mm-hmm. and they describe them. And then you submit them, boom, boom, they get the stamp, and now they have separate tax IDs, etc. Mm. And the beauty is, while they were doing this, I advertised the penthouse for sale, ended up selling the penthouse for $2 million because it has a view of the bay.
Wow.
$2 million. So when they saw the lease for Puma for $240,000 a year, they said, oh, we can give you $3.6 million loan or something like this. When they saw that my contract was 3.5, they said, this is the maximum we can give you. So I got the loan, literally, 3.5 million. I got my $5,000 deposit back because the guy paid the closing cost. And we actually got the building. And then I went like 6 months later to sell the penthouse. Went back to the bank. I said, I separated the deeds. I'm selling the penthouse. Mm. When we went to close, the banker was sitting there and he said, okay, this is the couple that's going to buy. And we gave you a loan, $3.5 million for a three-story building. Mm-mm. I said, yes. And they said, so when you get the money, now the $2 million, we may need you to reduce the loan. I said, okay, understandably. How much? He said, I don't know. I need to go ask the VP. That was the accountant for the bank. So he left and I started to pray. It becomes a religious experience. You know? So please, God, don't let them take too much. I want to cash out as much as $2 million possible. He comes back and he said, well, if you assign the lease of Puma to the bank, that means assign it to the bank, that means the payment of Puma come to the bank and Sharif Medawar, and they deposit it. If I default, I can default. Because if I don't pay them the rent, they just take it and they foreclose on me and kick me out. So the bank risk is reduced tremendously. They said, if you sign the document to assign the lease to us, we'll send a letter to Puma to send the checks to us and you, and it gets deposited in your bank account, but it reduces our risk completely. We'll let you cash out the whole $2 million. I said, come again? He said, yeah, you have corporate guarantee, publicly traded company. I mean, like the guy's telling me, you're a nobody. We just need Puma's lease. I said, and where is the $2 million going to go? We can deposit it here. We can wire it to the bank, whatever you want. Can you give it to me cash? He said, no. Okay. So I opened an account there. We deposited the money there for that transaction, ended up cashing out $2 million. Now you're going to say, okay, Sharif, wait a minute. Don't they withhold any money for taxes? Well, here's the deal. It's less than a year, right? So it's short-term capital gains. So they said to me, you have to fill out this form for the taxes. And the form says, purchase building, $3.5 million. Selling top level, $2 million. Please tell us the cost basis of the building when you bought it for each floor, so we can retain 33% of the taxes on that $2 million. And I thought about it, said, okay, the top floor, I bought it 6 months ago, I allocate the cost basis of $2 million. The second floor, $500,000, and the first floor, $1 million. This accountant sitting next to me, he grabs the calculator. The buyers are sitting across the table. He calculates $2 million plus, $500,000 plus $1 million. He goes, oh, that's the cost basis of the building, $3.5 million. That makes sense. So you bought it, was $2 million cost basis, sold it for $2 million. You have no profit. I said, no, no profit. Just have some closing costs to pay right now, so I have a loss. He goes, I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry for you. So thank you for your emotions. So my point is, like, lest you think the IRS is stupid. The IRS is not stupid, because they're going to say, okay, so you bought it, 6 months later you sold it, so probably same price. Okay, we got that. But now your cost basis downstairs is $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. If I really sell the package of Puma, first, second floor alone, $240,000 a year at 6% cap. The cap is the capitalization rate. That means for every $60,000, 6%, it's worth $1 million. This is $240,000 a year rental income. Mm-hmm. That's $4 million worth. If I sell downstairs at $4 million, they're going to go back to the sheet, say your cost basis was $1.5 million. You got $2.5 million profit, you pay the taxes now. But I'm not selling it right away. So if I sell it after a year, it's long-term capital gain. It's lower. And if I don't ever sell it, guess what? It's just lower capital. And believe it or not, I still hold the building. Last year, I sold the second floor because there was a couple that came in. Two guys that are attorneys from Washington, D.C., they came and bought it. So I actually did it again, but now I have only the first floor. And I have a very good tenant coming in called Piranha Joe. These are, it's a franchise in the Caribbean. So, So I mean, when you have a good building, it can keep paying you forever.
It can.
Warren Buffett says, I buy publicly traded companies and stocks and all this for their future streams of income, or I buy commercial buildings for their future streams of income.
Yes, sir.
And that's the key thing to do.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's okay if we talk about this too, sure. But didn't Puma try and get out of the lease?
Yes. So fast forward a year and a half later, after all this, Puma calls me up. I remember my daughter was barely 3 years old, and she's 18 now. So Puma calls me up and they say, listen, we would like to get out of the location. Yeah. And this was the top guy for me. I said, wait a minute, how can you get out of the location when you have people standing in line? And he said, well, we made a mistake when we signed the big mall. Mm-hmm. We had a radius restriction. That means when sometimes the tenant signs, they are restricted. If they open any store in the vicinity of 3 to 5 miles, they'll have to pay the mall because the mall is promoting them. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to have to give some of the net or from the gross, whatever. So he said, well, we didn't realize, and we're selling so much in that location, we're going to have to give them millions. So I said, well, how much are you going to pay me? You have like 8 years left on the lease. 8.5 or something like this. And they said, we'll give you $571,000, like $500,000 to get out. Mm. And they remodeled the place. Like, all I have to do is get on the phone, start smiling and dialing using my system, and call somebody else and get them in for probably more money than the $20,000 a month. It was already kicking in at $20,600 because we had the rent increase, the 3%. So what I did is I told the guy, listen, $571 is not good enough. You'll have to come up to a better price. He said, how much do you want? I said, no, you tell me how much it's worth it for you to get out of that lease. And I hung up on the guy. He started yelling. He started calling me names. But they're publicly traded. Now, if it's a mom and pop, I would not argue too much, try to be
absolutely
fair.
Absolutely, yeah.
But publicly traded, they print money. I could be ruthless. And I said, look, man, I borrowed against this property. You can do this to me, so good luck to you. And you better come up with a better price. And I hung up. But then he immediately started smiling and dialing, calling other tenants, because I knew they want out.
Yeah.
They called me back and they paid over $1 million.
$1 million. And you re-rented.
And I re-rented to Crocs. At 22.5, I think it was. Because Crocs, when they came in, they said, okay, this place is ready to go. I said, you want it? Yeah. And this is 2009. People were telling me, the market is in shambles. 2008, 2009, and you're kicking them out and you're getting a million. That million is going to be gone in no time. I'm like, no, there'll be other tenants. National tenants grow.
They do.
They grow. Look, during the pandemic, who was growing? The QSRs, quick service restaurants, all the Jack in the Boxes, the Subways were growing. If you were in the joint venture program, you would be doing deals. So, make a long story short, Crocs ended up coming in, and it was another nice run with the Crocs for many, many years for a lot of money, several million.
So that three-level building had a ton of stories, amazing stories.
Huh? Yes, yeah, you could do it. Look, once you understand the concept, the game is where, like these are the questions you should ask yourself. Where and when? Because you need the location and need timing, okay?
That's right.
Then what and how? Okay, what am I going to do and how am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. Then who and why? Who am I going to do it with and why? Why these people? Mm-hmm. And then for how much? And for how long? You solve these six questions, even in your personal life, if you think, where do I want to live, right? Mm-hmm. And when do I want to go there? When do I want to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where do I want to go to, let's say, live by the beach? And then the next thing is, what will I do when I live there, right? And then how I'm going to do it. So maybe I want to travel and I want to do this. Who do I marry, right? Who do I want to be with? And why? Why this person? And then next thing, for how long? For the rest of my life. How much I give her or him all the love I can, right?
That's right. That's right.
So you find these six questions have guided my life in many ways.
Yes, sir. So residential, commercial. Now, one thing I was wanting to do, because I haven't done this yet, but I've been very interested, is hotels.
Ah, I love hotels.
I guess I want to know your thoughts on what hotels were and what kind of, like, situation are we in right now with hotels in this day and age?
So let me preface what I'm going to say by telling you, in my opinion, the best development on the land is a hotel. Why? Because it can give you so much of what you want. You can have some retail downstairs, even if it's a small hotel, a little retail downstairs. You can have some food operation. You can rent them monthly, do extended stay. You can rent them nightly. Mm-hmm. So you have the best of both worlds. You can do like in the Caribbean and exotic location, you can do vacation points, you can sell points. So people prepay you and then they don't use most of the points, time expires. It's up to the people. You can sell timeshare. So it's just such a flexible asset. Another thing I like about hotels is, let's say you buy a little 100 room hotel. You already have it with, let's say, 20 individuals that are a crew.
That's right.
You can look at the numbers from the get-go. Okay, how much is it doing? And then you can improve on the numbers. How do you improve on the numbers? You open more what's called distribution channels. Mm-hmm. So they're only promoting on this site and this site. They don't even have a website. Guess what? You create your own website, you promote on hotels.com, you promote on Expedia, you promote on all these channels. Now, a lot of people like Airbnb. Airbnb is so spread out. Now, it so happened I do Airbnb, but it's all in Old San Juan, Puerto Rico. It's all controlled in one area. So it's like a hotel, but it's just different areas. Mm-hmm. But I have hotels as well. I have small hotels. And we're developing two hotels that are 30 rooms each, luxury hotels. But I stopped that and I thought I'm going to get a partner for these. They have tax credits up the wazoo. Wow. We can even talk about that later.
I'd love to.
Yes, off camera. And then we'll talk about on camera later as we
That'll
do.
That'll be the way I can learn from a mentor in hotels.
Hotels are amazing. Now, what's the problem with hotels?
Yeah.
So problem with hotels are quite a few things, okay? So you have to always look at the good and the bad, the positive, the pros and the cons. Problem is banks don't like to loan against hotels.
Okay.
Why? Because they say, well, if I foreclose on you, I don't know what to do with it. This is a whole business operation. So we're going to have a division to manage this, or have to get a management company. Believe it or not, at one point in the United States, this is in the early 90s, 91 specifically, 92, when there was the Valley Federal Savings, the savings and loan debacle. Anyway, the banks would foreclose and go to the owner that they gave them the loan and say, can you continue managing it? So they would foreclose on the party and they would say, continue managing it. That's how bad it was for the banks. But the banks don't want to, they don't want to give a high loan. So they'll give 60% loan, maybe 50%.
Lower loan to value.
How do you take that to your advantage? A lot of hotel motel deals are done with seller financing, especially the first couple of years. Mm-hmm. So then the bank says, okay, so you know how to run it. Our risk is lower. We can see your own numbers, not the numbers you're buying. Now we're going to give you a better loan, 65%. Now you're able to cash out somebody. So the no financing from banks. The other thing is staffing today is very hard. Getting staff, getting people to work is very hard. You can't incentivize them enough. People are flaking out on employers all over the place. It's getting harder and harder and harder. And it's hard in hotels. So even like in my hotels, we pay people very well. We pay them very well. And still we lose them. And I say, why did I lose you? Where are you going? Well, I just found something closer to my home. I don't need to drive that far. They're going to match what you're paying me. So this other, let's say it's a Burger King, are matching what I'm paying for a hotel. And they have to flip burgers because the Burger King company is desperate to get somebody. So it just has become such a mess. That's why inflation is happening. And that's why all the automation in the burgers and hotels and all this is coming more and more and more. I saw the other day somebody who created a machine that you can enter in a room, open it, goes around the bed, and you click it, and it just changes the sheets. I never knew they would invent something like this.
Wow.
Literally change the sheets and spread it and put it, yeah. So, I mean, look, hotel now, you go to the Marriott and Hilton, and it says, if you don't use the towels and you don't use housekeeping and this, we can give you a discount.
Mm-hmm.
Or they do it in reverse now. They tested that, then they do it in reverse. I was in a hotel and they said, if you want service, we'll charge you just a little bit more. In Las Vegas, the best hotels, Aria, the hotel and casino, they were like, hey, listen, help us save by doing this. So I didn't take a shower for a week. No, I'm just kidding. I like savings. So I like hotels. Just you have to have a good crew. And if you don't want to deal with the crew, the solution is you hire a management company. The good thing is there are professional management companies that are small enough to manage these hotels. So you can hire a management company, you can do creative financing, and you can definitely take a property that's performing at 80% occupancy, $150 ADR, to 90% occupancy, $180 ADR. And it changes like this. It's not like an apartment building where you gotta kick the people out, then remodel the place, then pay commission to. I mean, hotels, you can open distribution channels and understand the market because you have what's called intrinsic value, what the hotel value is based on the age, condition, and performance, and extrinsic value, which is what's happening with that market segment. There are reports called the STAR reports.
STAR report.
The STAR report is Smith Travel Research. You can say, I'm going to buy this hotel, the Wyndham, downtown Kansas. I need the STAR research report on this, pay $600 or something. They'll give you, they cannot tell you specifically, but they'll tell you how this hotel is doing in this market. So you can say, oh my God, it's running at 90%, $200 ADR, that's great. But then when you find out the whole market is running at $95, at 95% occupancy, $250, you realize you're not running so well.
Yeah.
So then you realize there is potential here, or what's happening. There are certain brands also you can specialize, dig deeper. Let's say Hampton Inn does very well, Residence Inn by Marriott. You can do Hilton Garden Inn. They do well. You want mid-budget to last in good markets and bad markets.
And not maybe not like a St. Regis probably. That'd be a little
yeah, that's just... Leave those for the publicly traded companies because they lose money. They don't pay the investors any dividend. They lose more money. They raise money. It's a mess. Like Ritz-Carlton, at one point, they were losing so much money, but their slogan was, ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. And I'm thinking, but none of the ladies or gentlemen making any money. But then it ended up getting bought by Bill Gates. He bought for most of, Bill Gates owned a lot of these. So him and the Saudi prince, Talal, Ibn Talal. Wow. He owns 25%. Bill Gates owned 50. Now he owns 70. He bought another 25. Bill Gates owns a lot of stuff in the hotels.
I did not know. So for someone new, should I go independent or do you recommend going and go branded?
I would suggest in the beginning, the lowest risk is to go branded.
Okay.
And to go with either the company, let's say Wyndham running it for you, or a local management company to run it. Okay. You're not going to make as much money, but you're going to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm always of the mind that you want to be in the business of real estate, not in the real estate business. You don't want to be sucked into running the hotels. You want to run the asset.
That's right.
Yes. And some assets you say, okay, this is a money machine. I don't want to sell it. Some, you know, from the get-go, I got to just get it going better and then flip it to somebody else who's going to go and live in it and make it happen. A lot of mom and pop operations in hotels.
Yeah. So I know you've done residential. Hotels, multifamily, triple nets, you've done gas stations, I think you've done a little of everything. If I was to take you right now and pluck you out and throw you in, Nashville, Tennessee, and you had no money, okay, no money, no credit cards, anything.
Yes.
What would you do the first 30 days to get started and do?
I would look for single tenant buildings, and I will, these are standalone that are vacant. I will find a good location. I know there are 15 criteria I look for, traffic, neighboring tenants, etc. I'll get the location, I'll do a video, I'll try to access the inside by convincing the broker that I want to help them increase the value, etc. It's all communication. Mm-hmm. And I'll do a little video inside, outside, and I'll talk to the national tenant list that I know. And if I don't have the list, I'll start thinking, who would be the best tenant next to these existing tenants for this vacant location? Okay, all these. And I'll focus in the beginning on food tenants, and I start smiling and dialing, and all I need is one tenant to say I'm interested, and that property that I look at would, I wouldn't say double in value, but pretty close to it. If I have it under contract at 400,000, it will go up to 800, if not 900, and if it only goes up to 600,000, that's 200 to 250,000 value increase, and I'll either call the seller and say, would you let me come in with you on that deal? You already own it. If I bring in a tenant for 10, 15 years, would you put me in as 30% owner with you? It doesn't require a full brain for him to say yes, because I'll add so much value to him.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So that's what I would do.
How often, whenever you were doing your deals, like, for example, the Puma building, technically you didn't have to come out any capital. You got your $5,000 back in it, or did the bank require at that time just a little bit, or how did that go?
Okay, so there are stages in my life. If you take all my decades of investing, there were times I had to come up with no money at all. Times a credit card cash advance was perfectly fine. Bank couldn't care less where I got the money. There were other times where I had to give my personal guarantee. I had to give them my kids. I have to show them that this is my wife or my house. I have to give cross collateral. I have to give them blood. and then finally they gave me 60%, and I had to convince the seller to carry the financing. Then they came back and said, no, we don't want him to carry it. What if he doesn't get any payments? You show us him, right? So I've gone through it all, and it all depends on the country and what's happening in the country at the time. For instance, people tell me, who do you want as a president? I don't know. I don't know enough to be able to make that decision, but just tell me who's going to be the president. Let me listen to their policies, how they affect real estate, and I'll adjust accordingly.
You'll pivot, yeah.
You'll have to. And that's where people who complain about the United States, for example, I say, I would like them to go to another country and try to do what you can do here. I dare them to do what 10% of what you can do here. Mm-hmm. You can't. And I've lived in the Middle East, I lived in Europe, I lived in Latin America, I lived all over the place. And all I do, even on vacation, when I land somewhere, I go look for real estate, talk to broker, talk to agents, talk to all this. Nothing compared to the US. So anybody complaining, maybe they're on salary and the inflation is eating them alive. And all I say is, just do what I did. I was in a hotel on salary, worked harder, learned more, did. And this country offers you all what you want. Mm-hmm. You just have to work harder.
That's right.
And believe it or not, it's a lot easier today. Today, if I want to look at a property, I'm sure you're like me. We'll go on the internet. Within 15 minutes, we can find in this zip code right here. Yes. We'll find 3-4 deals. Listed on the market, below market, seller desperate, and they went through a broker and they want to sell.
Yeah.
But before, when I started, I had to go look at Penny Saver. I had to look at they had this blue book that will come up every couple of weeks from the real estate brokers. I mean, I had to go drive around. Today, I can look at the pictures and the videos and the walk-in cameras. It's unreal how easy it is.
Absolutely.
I mean, if somebody can't make money now with real estate or with something, I like real estate because it's a productive asset, meaning I buy it, it produces cash flow.
Yes.
If you buy it to fix it and sell it, then it produces a cash out. I don't buy art. I don't buy beautiful homes to impress somebody. I don't do that. And still, with all the experience and all this, I constantly have to, like you said, learn more, work harder, work smarter, and that's how it works.
Absolutely. What are some neighborhoods you would not invest in?
You know, I learned a long time ago, I could invest in any neighborhood. One time I drove, it was close to downtown Orlando. I looked at an area, it was nighttime, it was very bad. I couldn't even ask for directions, that's how scary it was. And I remember seeing a single tenant building all boarded up with graffiti. Fast forward about 2 years later, I'm driving, it was in the afternoon, and I said, oh my God, I recognize if I turn right here, I'll get to that bad neighborhood. I'm gonna go take a look. So I went and I look, and that bad single tenant building with graffiti was turned into a beautiful Jack in the Box. And yes, the neighborhood was not the best, but guess what? Killers need to eat too. And Jack in the Box was making a killing, whoever bought that at a cheap price, put Jack in the Box and everybody's making money. And the neighborhood, they're taking care of that building. So no, I'll invest anywhere that makes sense.
So if you could have only one class, residential, commercial, multifamily, what would it be? What would it be?
The commercial.
Commercial.
Commercial mixed use, because commercial mixed use will give them the best of all what you can think of. The long-term commercial lease downstairs, the upstairs, you want to make it office. I have a building I made the upstairs. It's going to be storage facilities where we're dividing all the spaces to storage. You can do Airbnb. You could do so much with mixed use. So I love to do commercial. I do commercial trainings a lot.
One more thing that we're going to try and do before we wrap it up is I'm going to ask Sharif a few questions, and he has maybe 10 to 15 seconds to answer. So kind of like a rapid fire. All right. So Sharif, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So what was the largest amount of money you made off of one deal?
Okay. So the largest amount of money I made on one deal was $3.5 million, because compared to what I put in, which was like less, not even $10,000. That was incredible.
Okay. And what was the most money you've ever lost on a deal?
Most money I ever lost on a deal is $1.7 million.
Okay. What's the largest loan you've ever gotten?
The largest loan was a package. I get package of loans. So it's $28
million. Wow.
Okay. So now I'm going to do some rapid fire for you.
I'm ready.
Single family homes or small apartment buildings?
Small apartment buildings.
Why?
Number one, if you have one vacancy, like let's say you have 10 units, you have one vacancy, you only lost 1/10 of the income. If you have one single family, you lost 100%, and you can force appreciate. It's technically commercial, so it's kind of cheating.
Okay, very good. So due diligence, how was your first due diligence for a first apartment building?
Honestly, I really didn't do much due diligence like I should have. But honestly, I just walked through every apartment the best I could. I met the tenants, looked at the ground, and I just did it from my own eyes. Good. Not the correct way to do it, of course. You need to hire someone to come take a look.
So who is that someone?
A professional third-party person that can come in. Or in this case, my brother. Mm-hmm. He builds Chick-fil-A's, Aldi's, grocery stores, so he understands a lot better. He knows exactly what we're looking for. So we're checking the PHER, P-H-E-R, plumbing, heating and air, electric, and then roofs and stuff too. So that's the main four that we look at.
Very good, very good. All right, do you prefer pre-existing multi-units or developments?
I've never done new development, but I want to get into it. But honestly, it's probably pre-existing because you can buy them at a lower cost to build.
Brilliant answer. Because right now, land is all over the place. Interest rate is higher. Cost of construction is higher. Staff is all over the place. I love what your answer is.
And materials are hard to get.
Yes, very hard. What's the first, the worst deal you've ever done in your life?
Honestly, it wasn't just the deal. So I bought a property, a single family home. And the tenant was I was still receiving payments from the potential tenant, but it ended up that that lady had left. It was a duplex, actually. So I had two tenants, but one of the ladies left. She subleased it to another person.
Ooh.
Okay. That person left. The other side, the B side, started paying their rent. So I thought it was okay. They drilled a hole in between. Put a electric cord from their electric box to the other one to make both sides work. Then they left and subleased the entire thing. By the time we found out that there were people in there doing illegal moonshine. So it was just the worst deal because I didn't, number one, I didn't do good diligence. That's number one. Number two, we wasn't going and verifying or doing inspections.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so that's probably the worst deal I done.
So how do you avoid it in the future?
I always do good due diligence and meet the tenants now, make sure. And inspections quarterly.
Very good.
Yeah. What's the worst deal that you've done?
Worst deal I've done? Actually, it's a deal I've done in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I bought a property and had a partner. And then he thought I was going to do some things. I thought he was going to do some things. I wrote everything in writing. He didn't read it. There was some miscommunication, different language. Let's call it language barrier. I remember when I was putting the deal together, I'm talking to him and he's like, yeah. Yep. I'm like, wow, this guy is like, we are in agreement, man. We shake hands. I go leave. It was a positive problem because he wired all the money in escrow. And I called. They said it's $4.5 million here. I was like, wait. I'm supposed to send $2 million and a quarter. I have to call the guy. And he's like, yep. I was like, oh, my God. He doesn't understand. So it created such confusion at the closing. And then I have to give him the money outside closing because we had a due deal. We called the broker, and the broker said, I will not give you. I said, can you just give me till tomorrow because there was a misunderstanding. I need to wire the money this, and they need to wire him back. He said, I will not give you an hour extension. That means we could have lost $4.5 million. I mean, it was just so bad. Nobody was cooperating. It was millions of dollars, total misunderstanding, miscommunication, and we closed. And so it's the lesson I learned is make sure they understand. Understanding is a universal solvent. So you communicate, it has to be clear, and they have to respond. The yeah, doesn't mean anything. But it was, overall, it was good dealing with the guy because he was very honorable. But it was a very bad deal because it was a mess. We couldn't, what we thought we were going to do based on what he told me is not what we were going to do. So we ended up just saying, let's just get rid of this thing. What do you think the secret to your success is?
Ooh, mentors. Mentors, education, and just do it. Sometimes you got to get to the point where you don't just keep learning. You got to just do.
Okay, so how do you know this is the right mentor for me? Because there are so many mentors out there.
Number one, don't just jump on to the mentor right away. Listen to what they say. And after a while, you'll start realizing if they're experienced. I could tell not only did, for example, you, not only did you have experience and you were explaining things, but honestly, I saw that you had a track record. And also the complications and the strategies that you were saying really resonated with me. I had enough experience to see that what you were saying was like, he's a veteran. Mm. I wanted the veteran, and you were the veteran.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Okay. And what was the worst mentor you've had? Like, you paid for the person, and then you got there, and you're like, oh, this is not.
Believe it or not, the very first guy that I met that told me about real estate, he's bankrupt right now. So he said, you need to do real estate to be rich. And I was like, man, that's cool. But he didn't help me very much. Every time I give him a call, he'd just give me a quick answer, and that's it. And he's banked up right now, and he's not a mentor anymore, sadly.
Yes, you know? Yes, that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
And do you mentor others right now? Like, would you take one at a time, or do you think it's a waste of time?
No, I love mentoring. I think, honestly, it helps me become a better investor, too, when I'm explaining and looking at their deals.
Very good.
So, yeah, we're trying to do a couple dozen right now. I want to get to a couple thousand like you, though. Yeah.
Good. How will you simplify your life?
I think segregating it. You know, number one, family is one thing. Friends is another, myself, and then business. I try and segregate in those four different ways and make sure I'm 100% present in each of those things.
So family, friends, business, and what else?
Family, friends, business, and then honestly, my personal self.
And yourself, okay.
Yes, so you maybe... I have to have my alone time to be able to nerd out too.
Yeah. Yes, for sure, for sure. Very good point.
Yeah. All right, so Sharif, very important. Cancun or Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico.
Okay, why?
Because Puerto Rico is U.S., it's Caribbean, and it really, I've been in it so long, it has been good to me, and I have reciprocated being good to it.
All right, what's most important, the interest rate, the term, or the balloon?
The terms. Well, terms. The terms is really the interest rate and the balloon.
I mean like the
balloon.
Term length, yes, but yeah. Yeah.
So you want the maximum time possible. Time can kill you or can be your friend. So if you're gonna get a high interest rate, you shouldn't go into the deal. Okay, unless it's like such a quick flip that, but it's just, this is the game that the lenders have done recently, is they got to your loan in the beginning at a lower interest rate, and as you extend it, they increase the interest rate. So I prefer the longest possible lowest interest, of course, that's the winning game. So it works against the banks, not against you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't want to be against the bank, you just want to be a fair game, but the banks can easily turn on you in a heartbeat.
Okay. All right. Buyer holds or fix and flip? If you can only do one, which one?
Okay. So each one has the problem of the buy and hold, the problem of what's going to happen over the long run. Mm-hmm. The fix and flip, what's going to happen with taxes. So anytime I can fix and flip quickly, when I say quickly is 6 to 12 months, I'll do fix and flip. The buy and hold, I want the location to be so amazing that holding it will not be a problem long term. So you have to be able to anticipate what's happening in the market. That's why I'm in Old San Juan, Puerto Rico. You only have so much depth and water. You only have so many historic buildings, etc. So what's your favorite car?
Lamborghini Huracan.
And do you have that?
I do.
Oh
yes,
my
I
God.
Bought my dream car.
So maybe you don't want to say how much it cost you, but when did you get it?
A year and a half ago. It was $269,000.
That's fantastic.
I think every little kid, when they're little, they grew up saying, I want a Lamborghini. So when I started making money, I said, I'm going to buy one. And I did.
Cash or payments?
Oh, I always get with financing. I try and leverage what
I can.
Yeah,
so you can do it. So you buy the asset pays for the car.
That's exactly what I did. I would have, and I told myself, if I don't take this $269,000 or $280,000 and invest it, if I can't make the monthly payment, I'm not going to buy it. So I play little games like that.
So you put the money and it's paying for the car.
In a triple net lease, actually.
I love it. I love it. I was just going to tell you, hopefully it's no hassle with them.
Yeah.
So do people resent you for driving it?
I do. I have some people just hate me or look down
throw
on
something
me.
At you or something.
We had one guy, and we have it on film, actually. I stopped at a red light. He came out and just started kicking at the front of the car and told me to get out and wanted to fight me. Really crazy. And then he came to my side, and I just took off. But yeah, I don't know why. Yeah.
Yes, it does happen. Mm-hmm. Well, I am very proud of my car. I drive a Solara convertible Toyota.
I saw it. It's very nice.
I had it for many years. People love me for it. They blow kisses at me.
Yes, sir. Fair loves convertibles.
Yes.
That's what she wants.
A few times I got tempted to buy an exotic car and stuff. And I actually, when I was younger, I went crazy with that. When I was 28, I bought a 750 IL that had just came out.
Wow.
Anthony Robbins and me. The only two that had it in San Diego County. Yes. 12-cylinder, it was a rocket.
Oh, my God.
But then I just, honest to God, I bought this Toyota Solara 20 years ago. And I thought to myself, as soon as it breaks down, I'm just going to sell it. 20 years later, it does not break down. I wanted to.
That's amazing.
The top drops like no sweat, no problem. It drives smoothly. I don't even know when I have to change oil because it's still smooth all the time. Nobody makes cars like Toyota. Lamborghini is a whole different class. I just had to throw that in.
Well, what's one car that you say, you know what? I'm going to splurge. I'm going to get it.
It's probably... Rolls-Royce.
Like
Rolls-Royce.
Cullinan, Phantom, Ghost.
I could go for the Bentley as well. It's got to be the two-door, it's called the drop head.
Drop
head. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Rolls-Royce are beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. I just like it a lot, yeah.
Yeah. We went to meet a friend down in Costa Mesa real quick, because actually we stayed here. We was going to stay in Los Angeles and just come here in the morning. Uh-huh. I have a friend that he, do you know what a Pagani is?
Yeah, Pagani.
He has a Pagani and he brought his Bugatti.
Oh, brought him.
And I was like, oh, wow. And he says, yeah, this one matches. I have all my Paganis, blue and black. There's like four or five of them.
It's what does he do for a living?
He trades commodities, energy and oil.
That's is he crazy. A broker or he trades his own money with his own money?
I didn't get enough to, yeah. I'm going to go out to dinner with him either tonight or tomorrow night. Okay. And I'm going to ask him that very thing. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, it's very important because some people make commissions, whether others make money or lose money. And that's just, then they can splurge. But I'm more interested in just a simple, to simplify.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So to simplify your life, I want to answer again because you said a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Buying so many single family homes and so many apartment buildings and having so much staff, it complicates life for
it
what?
Does. It
so
does.
I've noticed through life that people acquire assets and have a lot of cash flow and then have to manage people. And then at one point they say, I just want to get rid of it all and then just pay off this building and live off of it. And then I always tell people, if the end goal is simplicity, start with simplicity. Just get some triple net buildings and be done.
Yes,
and
sir.
Pay them
yes,
off.
Sir. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. That's what I've been talking about. I said, man, I got 400 single family homes, 400 taxes to pay, insurance, tenants. Now, in the apartments, at least it's one tax parcel.
Exactly.
One, insurance payment. So the multifamily, pretty simple, but single family, I'm thinking about liquidating those out slowly.
Yes.
And then just put them into the commercial triple net lease like you honestly taught us.
Yes.
That's kind of what I'm wanting to do. I think it's easier.
But knowing you, I bet you're also thinking, I'm at 400. What if I just push it a little bit more and get to 1,000?
Yeah,
you see?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that too. I'll do 1,000 single family.
And then it will be like I'm making a million a month. And then I can just, if I can just, and then the million a month becomes, but that's growth. If I can get a million net, I've been there. And I can tell you, at the end of the day, you want your sanity at home, and you want just enough assets to say, I have enough, let me go enjoy life. Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful partner, you're going to get married to her pretty soon.
Yes, and funny enough, I had told her too, and I told her this a couple years ago when I first met her. I said, I'm at this place that, and you know this more than anyone, you know how whenever you start something, it's real tough, but then you get to this point, you're like,
Yes.
Then you say, I want to try this now. You start and it's tough. And then, right?
Yes.
I said, I'm at this point that I've stabilized. I'm living good. I can do two directions. I can either kind of retire and we'll just enjoy life and have fun and maybe just do some things that we enjoy. Or I can work really hard. Or I can do this little hybrid in the middle. And I realize that I've got a balance. And if I do that, I need your support. And she said, I want you to do in the middle because she knows I enjoy working.
Yes.
I believe I don't care. I think I'll work until I die. I like to stay busy.
Yes.
So honestly, a year ago, actually it was like October or maybe September, I said, okay, I'm going to try and build a team. So I got three or four guys, just the best, Colin, Tim, and David. They've been amazing. Of course, my brother's come to work and we're working together. My brother's the smart one is what I always say.
Good.
But, but starting that means you go through certain stresses. We're trying to build. I'm trying to teach them to get started, to get momentum and grow.
Yes.
But now I'm like, man, now, I mean, sometimes I just want to make it more simple.
Yes,
so I do want to stabilize, get them where it's kind of got some momentum without me. So I don't have to be active. I don't mind being semi-passive.
Yes.
In the business, but eventually we want to be completely passive.
No, it's a very good point. Mm. Everybody's goal to be passive, you will never be completely passive.
Oh, sir.
But there are two challenges, which are, number one, the more activities you do, the more problems it will create, the more risk you have, number one. Number two is the bigger you become, if you're going to get $10 million properties, you're going to have $10 million worth of problems. The problem is no longer $1 million. It's a $10 million. Lawsuits, challenges, problems, city wants you to do this and that. So just, I like her answer to you, which is, let's do it in the middle. And periodically, like I tell somebody, if you win $1 million, don't start planning right away what you're going to do with it. Take it, put it in the bank, go take a little vacation, relax, make it like your norm is to have that million.
Yes.
And then start looking at, and that's same like you're saying, it's hard. And then you pass a certain point, there's the tipping point where you're like, okay, now it's easy. I got the structure. That's when you need to wait a little bit before you get into something else. Because we often forget how hard it was. Everybody's reaching. The idea of growing by definition is to reach farther than you are, further than you can think, etc. But it just becomes very hard.
Yeah.
So I look at growth and contribution all the time. How am I going to contribute first to myself, my family, and then to others? Because very, very difficult.
It is. Well, here's some stuff, and I don't know if we'll put it on camera, but I at least can ask you. How do you handle now that, like I'm in my mid-30s. I never in my life thought I would be here. And I thank you guys. I give credit to everyone that's been there for me that I learned from, even people if I didn't know them, you know. But I, you know, like Grant Cardone, I'd never met him at the time, but I learned a lot from him, too.
Wonderful,
from
yeah.
YouTube, right? But how do you handle it once you get to a certain level where, and I hate to say it in this way, but like 1% of the world is doing something a little different than the 99%. It kind of brings you outside of like the circle.
Yes.
How do you handle like dealing with, I hate to say normal people, but like the normal people, how they look at you and stuff. You know,
yes.
Like I have family members, I don't know, they're like asking.
Yes, yes.
Or friends, hey.
It's very normal.
Like, yes. Yeah. How do you handle that?
The best way to handle it is to ask for something in return. To help, people don't understand the definition of help. Mm-hmm. Helping is an exchange of value. Mm-hmm. Okay, you want me to give you this? I need you to do that for me. I need you, you need me to give you $700 because you're short money, $700 or whatever. I need you to go paint this house for me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you need $7,000 now. Okay, well, I need you to do this work for me and I'll pay you this way.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody asks you, what can I exchange in value with them? And the exchange of value is so important. You know, like people say, you got to be, do, and have. But the minute you have, people want some of what you have, right?
That's right.
So, yeah. So be, do, have, and exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Exchange of value is the key thing in life. And the closer they are to you, the more you better make sure it's written down. Mm. So the way I handle it is, I'm not the type of guy that complains. Like if I think like this person is coming, he wants money from me and it's family member or something. Thank God family members are pretty successful. But the thing is, it does happen every now and then.
Mm.
Even they're doing a deal or something, they come and ask me. So I don't complain. I just say, okay, well, what if I put a collateral on this and I want this interest? What? That much interest? Well, I have to pay that to investors. And these obligations, you want this from me? I need that. So I explain it like it's a matter of fact, like it's a very friendly thing. Friendliness is very important for me. But
yeah, absolutely.
So the way to handle it is that. And the other thing is, once you reach a certain point, your focus should not be, in my opinion, okay, you're free to ignore it, should not be to continue growing and acquiring, should be to reduce debt.
Absolutely.
Debt and obligations. Mm-hmm. So if you reach at the end a point where you have enough assets that are free and clear, and you get a credit line,
exactly,
you can go bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to go bankrupt. People don't understand how easy it is. Like, look in 2022. There was COVID, and then 2021 market spiked, and everybody went in a frenzy. 2022, they thought it's going to continue a high. Interest rate went so high, the Federal Reserve, they were willing to take it to 18%.
Oh, and I thought they were. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen people that have apartment buildings, the syndications and stuff, they just couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Just got wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my 2 cents. So tell us about the hurricane. How fast does it go?
I don't know. I drive like a grandpa, so everyone laughs. I go about 80 miles. That's the fastest I've gone. But I think it'll go like, what, almost 180, 200?
Is it black?
No, it's gray.
Gray?
Yes, sir.
And what other exotic cars do you have?
Yes, so I have a 6x6, a Hellfire.
Oh my God.
I saw that on Jay Leno's garage. He had it on there. I said, man, that's a beautiful
truck.
How
much is that?
He paid $190-something for that.
Oh my God.
I did pay cash for that one. That was a dumb one. But they didn't allow financing on that one.
Oh,
yes,
my
sir.
God.
But yeah, but I do want a Cullinan Rolls Royce one day. I think that'd be really nice.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Rolls Royce, yes, convertible.
Mm.
It's called the drop head.
Yes, sir.
Yes, that's an awesome
that'd be
one.
Nice.
The Bentley also is an amazing one. The Bentley, yeah. Bentley convertible.
Now, if you want to know the truth, is I'm not a very I'm more of an introverted person. Okay, you're more extra. I'm more of an introvert. The reason I even bought the cars was because of a couple of things. Number one, there was a guy that taught on YouTube how to buy the cars.
Oh yeah.
There's a way to buy it and know how many miles you can put on it before you need to sell it.
Mm.
So on that one, I should hopefully either break even after having it for free technically for a year.
Are you serious?
And it helped me with my credibility. And then the truck is so big, it can be, it's for market, and I put very little miles on it, so I can, number one, sell it and either break even or make a little. Helps me with marketing. And in fact, funny enough, so I made $510,000 last year because of that truck.
How?
Because the opportunities and the people that reached out to me because of the truck.
You're driving it. And you have something on the...
I have my handles, my Instagram handles on it. And because of that, it connected me with two different buyers for two different deals that they gave me an option fee where I still own the building, so I can still 1031 later.
Oh, my God.
$510,000.
Are you serious?
So I was like, I paid $180,000. I'll break even. Even if I lost $30,000 on it and sold it for $150,000, I've made the $510,000. The Lamborghini's gotten the attention of other people, right?
Yes.
So that's how I justified it in a way. You know. But yes. Either way, even if I didn't do it off of, you know, credibility, and we're doing personal branding. I'm trying to get into that. Is you got to have things that will get as much attention as possible.
Yes, yes.
And I don't think you have to be a jerk and say really rude things to people online.
Yes, yes,
but absolutely. But to have things that will get attention, that, you know, I think you should get that Rolls Royce. You know?
Yeah.
And I also joke around with them. I said, I'm 30, in my mid-30s, it's my midlife crisis. You know?
That's
what
cool.
I say to them.
So I have a question for you.
Okay, yes, sir.
So you started, and in the I know it took you a while to get going, but then when you started, you're one of the few people that really caught my attention because you have compressed the time and results to a level I have never seen somebody do.
Oh, I appreciate that.
No, really, I mean, very impressive. And I know you have a program that you present to people. Tell me a little bit about your program. I want it because I'm going to play that video for my own students as well. So tell
me. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, I've taken everything that you've taught me, then single family, multifamily. And like I said, you opened my eyes to mixing together traditional and creative. Some people get stuck. I'm only going to do creative financing. Mm-hmm. And even that, I mean, there's a lot of good things in creative financing, but you can mix it with traditional.
Yes.
And I saw that you helped me be able to put that together, and it made my tool belt even bigger. And I felt like there's 33 different ways that I've been able to do deals in a creative way from stuff that you've taught me, actually. So I was like, man, and I'm sure there's other ways that I just haven't tried yet, but there's 33 ways that I've been able to do it. One thing I took from you is the forced appreciation. That's why I do get people like my buddy here to start in single family, but if they can come into commercial where you can force appreciate, it doesn't go with the economy on normal comps. It depends on what the leases bring.
Exactly.
So what we're trying to do is, for example, we're doing a boot camp, and it's a little overkill, but we're trying. It's 6 days. The first day is 8 hours of education, how to buy creatively and mix it with traditional, how to dispo, how to asset protection. I know you have great asset protection, the equity stripping. The second day, then we're going to actually let them hear us do phone calls and like actually make appointments with sellers. And then the third day, we're going to actually walk some properties, let them see some of the properties we have, see the different phases on the fix and flips we're doing. The fourth day, we're going to be doing dispos. We do lease option dispos.
Mm-hmm.
Or we may be doing triple net leases. We'll be trying to talk to some of them people. Mm-hmm. And then on the fifth day, all the people that come to the seminar, we're calling in their cities so that when they leave the conference,
they have deals to go.
They have deals to go do. And then on the sixth day, we're just hanging out. We're going to have fun. We might rent a boat or something like that. So that's what we're doing as far as boot camp. As far as the courses, we're going to be doing a single, because I don't know if you know, but it took me 5 years to do my first deal. And then in the first 6 months after I did my first deal, like I bought it in January, we sold it in August.
Yeah.
5 months, I bought 60 homes.
Fantastic.
And the next year, I bought 180 homes.
I remember, yes.
And I was able to buy a property, whether it be traditional or creative, and then we dispoed it with lease options. So we're just teaching people to see how I did what I did. I think that's the first thing to kind of get some experience.
Yes.
Then we're bumping people into commercial, basically the triple net lease, or we'll buy and then we'll master lease it to an owner user, which I've heard you've been selling some of those. And then multifamily, of course, we've been able to buy. We created something called The Method. So we've been able to purchase multifamily with no money down or very little, increase the income, just like you said. Sometime we'll segregate, but we've been trying to buy and hold. And of course, I want to get into hotels. So we aren't teaching that yet. But yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
Very good. And how many team members do you have help you manage the properties that you're holding that you bought?
So right now, down south, we have like four or five that do my property management, help me with the lease options down south Georgia. And then up north, I've hired 4 guys, and they help me with acquisition, disposition, and property management. And one's a project manager. So I don't do many fakes and flips. Like you, I'm still kind of, that's actually my weakness. But we're doing 2 or 3 a month of those fakes and flips. I haven't done any new development yet. Yes. And that's, I think that's about it, really.
Maybe, that's phenomenal. I'm so proud of you. And
I appreciate that.
One of these days, maybe we do a program together. I show you the developments from the ground up.
I would love that.
In Florida, yes.
I would love that. In fact, I was telling them too, we bought this really nice camera. What I was wanting to do is take a week or 2 weeks and film us do a whole deal process. Let them see how we talk to sellers. I think that would be really kind of make it like a cinematic thing. I'd love to have you be a part. Maybe we'll come do one of your fix and flips or whatever you're willing to have time for.
I love doing stuff with you.
Oh, I appreciate it. So tell us, if you don't mind, tell everyone at home, how can they find you on the internet and reach out to you?
Okay, so my name hopefully will be on the screen, Sharif Medawar. You can go to sharifmedawar.com. Yeah. It's CHERIFMEDAWAR. Or you can go to the company itself, CMREI.com. Sharif Medawar Real Estate Investing.com. And we have a great team. Ashley Jones has been with me over 20 years. And we'll tell you about the joint venture program, the setting up your own real estate fund. We'll take you from A to Z. And if you're already somewhere halfway in between, or even at the Z level, we'll take you even farther and further. So let us know how we can help you. And the easiest way to reach us, just go to the website. You'll see the emails, ashley@cmrai.com. You'll reach the VP, and she will tell you everything, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, make sure to follow Sharif, because no joke, I've built a $40 million portfolio over the last, 5-6 years. And I'd say at least more than half, 25, 30 million came because of the education he gave me. So I would love you guys to make sure to follow him. And we're going to beg him to come to one of our events soon too, so you guys can see him. Thank you, Sharif.
Thank you, Shane, so much.
Thank you, Shane.
Thanks, everyone.
See you guys later.